Welcome to this week's edition of Liberation Radio, podcast of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. Each week we bring you interviews and analysis on the struggles affecting poor and working people throughout the U.S. and the world, building the movement for socialism in the United States. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. This week we'll hear about the upcoming elections in Greece and the recent split within Syriza. But first, we got a chance to speak with Karina Garcia, a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in New York City. We got to speak about the current presidential campaign of Donald Trump and what role it's playing in the ruling class. We review his racist, xenophobic program, especially against the Latino people in particular, and you know how we should be reacting to this campaign and what seriousness we should be confronting it with. So a lot of people have been seeing Donald Trump as kind of a joke and something not to really to pay much attention to. Do you think we should ignore Trump?
You know, I feel like I think that the instinct, and I felt this way too. I mean, it's so frustrating. It makes you so angry. Just as like a Chicana person, you know, my family is immigrant, Mexican immigrants. Like, it just makes you so angry that you're seeing this idiot, you know, talking and running for president, and he has these horribly backward views. And I think the instinct is to ignore it. And I know that I personally myself wanted to ignore it, but the fact of the matter is we can't ignore it. We can't ignore it because what he says and what he does has an impact on our communities. It's where our communities have already been feeling it. And, you know, we know with the recent beating of the man in Boston by two of his Trump supporters that his impact is very real. And so I think we can't really ignore it. We have to respond to it.
Right, because a lot of people are saying that it's kind of political maneuvering and, you know, for publicity, but it really is a reflection of some deep-seated xenophobia and racism, right?
Yeah, and I think that it's easy for the political establishment and the media to sort of laugh off the situation or just like make fun of it. But the fact of the matter is, what they're doing really is facilitating this racism. You know, Trump is bringing into motion white supremacy. David Duke endorsed him, and you know now we have to call into motion. In the way that he's calling into motion white supremacy, we have to call into motion progressive people, Latinos, Black people, the community, labor, to respond to this and actually to fight back. Because we know that we can't really rely on these politicians to step up to the fascists, and the only way that that's going to change is by bringing out our people, the masses of people, just like in 2006. In 2006, one of the most, you know, vicious, racist bills came out, the Sensenbrenner bill, which was going to, criminalize anybody who gives any aid to any immigrant, meaning like, you know, doctors and family members could potentially be facing felony charges for aiding an undocumented immigrant. And what happened then is what needs to happen now. What happened then is that people poured out into the streets mm-hmm. in 2006. Millions of people across the country went into the streets, and they showed the power of the people. And, that was a community that everybody said was afraid and couldn't be organized. And we organized some of the biggest demonstrations in the country. And that had a tremendous impact. And that's what needs to happen again. We have to unleash our own forces. And I think that this is, to the contrary of just ignoring the situation, now is when we have to reinvigorate that movement and bring it back into the streets, demanding full rights and legalization, amnesty, and all the protections and the respect that our community deserves, this is an opportunity for us to galvanize our people to put these fascists back in their place.
And let's talk a little bit more about the political establishment and its response to Trump and the things he's been saying and doing. You know, Obama came out and made some remarks, and obviously the Republican Party is not shushing this guy. So what does it say about the political establishment?
Well, you know, Trump's views are really not just his own views, they're the views of all the Republicans right now who are running. So, you know, they really do believe this stuff. Like, they really are trying to, criminalize, and they have already. I mean, they've been, and it hasn't just been the Republicans, right? But, like, we were told in 2006 that all we needed to do was vote, and people needed to, like, get, you know, stop protesting and, you know, take their voices to the polls, and they did, and they elected a Democrat. And in the last, 8 years of having a Democrat in president, in fact, the Democrats actually had power of, the entire government, the Senate, the House, and the presidency. And not only did they not pass, immigration reform, but detentions and deportations actually increased. Mm. And so what we have to do is remember the lessons of 2006, and that's that far from moving and just voting for the Democratic Party, we have to keep our movement in the streets. We have to keep demanding what we actually want, which is amnesty and full legalization for our people and respect for immigrants and respect for working people. And we can't turn back.
And you were talking a little bit about, revitalizing this movement and getting back to the struggle that was invigorated in 2006. So what can people what can they start doing concretely to start revitalizing this movement? What's some actions that we can be taking today?
Well, I think one great thing that I've seen, there's been like so many memes and really like funny things that people have done making fun of Trump. And I think, in some ways those are really good things because they've brought a little bit of levity to the situation and like sort of brought about a lot of like Latino unity and pride. Mm-hmm. And I think that was good for a moment, and I think people can keep doing that, but now we have to get back into the streets and start building that movement and demanding what we actually want out of immigration reform. And so people's energy, but in the same way that they've been using it to create these memes to make fun of Trump, we should do those things to demand the kind of changes that we actually want. And so we need people to get out into the streets and demand full legalization, full rights for immigrants. And if they want to have a Trump piñata at that action, all the better. Whatever's going to bring people out, whatever's going to unite people, we can use that as an opportunity to organize our people, to not be demoralized by this racism and complete ignorance, but to use it, to capture this moment, to really give our communities what we deserve.
And you're helping organize something in New York City. That's right, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have an action next week. We're going to try to have a press conference in addition. We're going to try to protest. We're still working through with coalition partners and stuff that we're working in on the details, but we'll definitely email that out to Liberation Radio listeners, and we'll also have information posted on the Anti-Coalition website.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Karina.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Next, we get to speak to Walter Slomarik, a regular contributor to Liberation News. We discussed the upcoming elections in Greece and the recent split within Syriza and how it may play out. And we talk about the ongoing struggle of the Greek people against the austerity program. So, Walter, can you briefly explain for people what exactly the Greek debt issue is and also what the most recent agreement between the government and its creditors consists of?
Yeah, so in Greece, the government is in a great deal of debt, as primarily as a consequence of the world economic crisis. And sort of as a subsection of that, the European debt crisis that really hit around 2009. So, you know, there's this right-wing narrative that the Greeks are lazy, they don't work enough, they were pampered, they didn't pay taxes, and while there was certainly tax evasion, in reality that was done almost exclusively by the rich. And the persistence of this massive debt that the Greek government is in is a result of this ongoing extreme economic crisis that's really at the level of like the Great Depression. You know, there's 25% unemployment, such massive homelessness. People have are having trouble just eating the very essentials of life, you know, putting food on the table, heating their homes. And that's a result of the austerity policies that have been imposed on Greece by its main creditors, which are the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, which are sort of collectively referred to as the Troika. So last month, Greece agreed to a third agreement with the Troika, which, you know, is referred to sometimes as a bailout or the memorandum. You know, I prefer memorandum because, you know, bailout implies that the creditors are sort of coming to the rescue for Greece. And really what the bailout money, so to speak, is being used for is to just be funneled right back into the German and French and other major international financial institutions that had loaned Greece all of this money that now can't pay back, and just ensuring that they, you know, that they get their money. So this third memorandum was especially brutal. So in return for about a little bit over 85 billion euros, the Greek government is going to agree to raise taxes that are going to disproportionately affect poor and working people, accelerate the privatization process in like an especially humiliating way. They're actually going to surrender control over all these public assets to this, you know, theoretically independent third party that really is going to be controlled most directly by the Troika. Although the International Monetary Fund's participation in this third agreement is still, you know, kind of not settled. There'll be a tax on the right to retire, on pensions, and what they call the liberalization of the labor market, which basically means rolling back the rights that workers have won to control their own conditions on the job, to regulate their own industries. So it's going to be a very devastating agreement that'll just deepen the economic crisis that Greece is already in, and, you know, potentially lead to even greater debt and more memorandums. You know, this is sort of the vicious cycle that Greece is in.
Right, right. And so in retrospect, how do you evaluate the policy of the current Syriza government? Were they lying about their anti-austerity measures, or were they pursuing a poor strategy?
Right. I mean, you know, that's the unique thing about this third memorandum is that, you know, it was agreed to by a government that considers itself part of the radical left. Right, Syriza means a coalition of the radical left. So they won a very, you know, they didn't get a majority, but they came within two seats of the majority in the last election, which was held in January. And they were able to win so decisively because they ran a campaign that was based on two premises. One, that they would, you know, quote, tear up the memorandum, right? They would totally eliminate austerity, and they would begin to rebuild the rights that Greek workers had lost over the course of the economic crisis. And they promised at the same time that they would keep Greece in the Eurozone, in the group of countries that use the Euro common currency. And basically their argument was that, you know, the precedent of a country leaving the Eurozone, which has never happened before, would be seen as such a threat by the leadership of Europe, which is really becoming more and more concentrated in the hands of German imperialism, that they would basically, you know, they would feel the heat and they would cut Greece a deal. And instead of pursuing like this austerity-only policy that just leads to more and more economic crisis, that they would be forced to agree to adopt a pro-growth plan. And they even called for, you know, what like a Marshall Plan for Greece, or, you know, a European debt conference that would just sort of forgive the debt of the heavily indebted, you know, you could, like what are sometimes called peripheral states. So Greece, but also Italy, Portugal, Ireland, Spain, you know, the less developed major capitalist economies. So, you know, in terms of the question, what, were they lying, or were they just pursuing a mistaken strategy? You know, I think it's more of the latter. You know, I don't know if it makes sense to attribute sort of like malicious intent to this as much as like, you know, just poor ideological and strategic thinking, right? I mean, you know, the earlier on in the crisis, there were fewer institutions that the Eurozone had to deal with the crisis and what they call like a contagion, right? So what are the possible spillover effects of a Greek exit? Is that going to cause like Portuguese and Italian debt to spike? Is that going to, you know, basically, is that going to lead to other countries exiting the Eurozone? And, you know, they had a lot more, you know, for instance, they have this thing called the European Stability Mechanism, which is this 500 billion euro sort of like standing army of, I don't know, it's a giant bailout fund, right? So, you know, they have a lot more resources available to manage a contagion now. And there's even, you know, a section of the European capitalist class that favored a Greek bailout exit. And, you know, the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, has been giving interviews to different media outlets talking about how Wolfgang Schäuble, who's the German finance minister, was really pushing for a Greek exit during these most recent negotiations because, you know, they view the current model of European integration as unsustainable and that there needs to be sort of a culling of the herd for it to continue and accelerate.
And so has there been splits in Syriza? I mean, you know, with all that's gone on, who are the main contenders in the upcoming elections?
Yeah, so there's been a major split in Syriza, and I think that's been, you know, in a lot of ways, one of the most important political developments over the last few months. So there's the main faction, the leadership faction of Syriza, around Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, who, you know, remains a popular figure, even though he agreed to this devastating new memorandum, basically out of a sense that, well, you know, all the politicians agree to these things, but at least, you know, Tsipras put up a fight. But there's also a left-wing faction of Syriza, was a left-wing faction of Syriza called the Left Platform, which was led by the former energy minister, Lafazanis. And there are also other left-wing Syriza figures that are not actually part of the Left Platform, but sort of fall into their orbit or are aligned with them, like the Speaker of the Parliament, Zoe Konstantopoulou, who is sort of another prominent, she's still in Syriza, although probably not for long, another prominent Syriza left-winger. So the Left Platform was expelled first from the cabinet after they voted against the first sort of initial votes to approve the new memorandum. And then as early elections were called, they actually decided to formally split and to form their own party, which is called Popular Unity. And there's also been, you know, an initiative which may take a backseat now that sort of early elections have taken the main stage, to form a broad coalition of progressive and left forces opposed to the memorandum to organize struggle in the streets, which would include not just political parties, but also social movements and different sort of mass people's organizations.
And so, you know, what's the role of the other parties in Greece's large radical movement? I mean, you know, and what is their relation, I guess, to this new popular unity?
Yeah, so the other main left-wing party in Greece is the Communist Party of Greece, which has, you know, a very long history, is involved in a civil war and the resistance to the Nazis, and, you know, earlier in the crisis had been sort of one of the main poles of resistance against the memorandum. But they've adopted a highly sectarian and abstentionist strategy, meaning that, you know, rather than trying to accompany the people when they're, you know, supporting Syriza or supporting other sort of like non-revolutionary but like left political organizations, to accompany with them and to, you know, through their actions and through their unity with the grassroots of those organizations, expose the limitations of those political programs. They're just sort of conducting their own activities, which are very limited, and hoping that once the betrayal comes, right, like once, like in Greece, it's referred to as the somersault, right? So in the run up to the new memorandum being agreed to, you know, everybody was talking about, like, well, when is Tsipras going to do the somersault? And they were just assuming that once that happened, the masses would, you know, see the truth of their political program and sort of flock to them, and there would be sort of a repolarization of the Greek left and the Greek political scene generally. And we, so far, what we've seen is that has not happened. Mm. And in fact, you know, there's been limited polling in the last month, so it's kind of hard to get a sense of how they're doing, but I just saw one that came out this morning, and basically they have the same 5% support that they've had for, you know, the past year, or maybe more than that. But, you know, there's a hardcore of support for the Communist Party, but it doesn't seem to be expanding at all, either in the opinion polls or in the streets. So, you know, this probably is leading to, you know, significant internal pressures in the Communist Party, which of course has many, you know, very sincere, genuine revolutionaries. So we'll see if there is a change in their strategic orientation or their political tone. But so far that hasn't happened. You know, popular unity, so 25 members of parliament who were elected under the Syriza banner defected to join Popular Unity, which made it the third largest party in parliament, which means that after New Democracy, which was the main, which is the main right-wing party in Greece, failed to form a new government, they got the mandate to form it, which of course they weren't able to do, but it gave them sort of this platform to express their ideas, to introduce themselves to the Greek people. And the leader of the Communist Party had, you know, like a very brief phone call with the leader of Popular Unity, and then they came out with a statement condemning the new group, and, you know, it was just a continuation of that same sectarian strategy, which is opposed to the fundamental Leninist conception that you need to fuse with the masses and be with the masses wherever they're at, and to incrementally raise consciousness and build unity, and eventually the reality of the struggle will mediate which line is correct. Mm.
And so has there been any indication of a significant uptick in protests and strikes and other mass actions?
Well, you know, I think that the most significant mass activity of this most recent period has been the mobilization around the, I believe, July 5th referendum. So, you know, it wasn't always clear whether that Syriza was going to accept a new memorandum. In fact, it looked at certain points likely that they would leave the Eurozone. Or more accurately, be forced out by German imperialism, which wanted to impose these just absolutely unbearable terms, which were ultimately agreed to. So part of that brinksmanship was a referendum called by the Syriza government over whether or not to accept what, you know, compared to what they actually agreed to, was a very mild austerity package, which included some regressive taxes and other anti-people measures, but not nearly as much as what was ultimately agreed to. And so, you know, the right wing and the officials of the Troika wanted to use this as an opportunity to blackmail the people to say, look, if you don't vote yes, then Greece will be kicked out of the Eurozone. And there'll be, you know, like a total economic apocalypse. But what happened instead was that there is not only an overwhelming no vote, meaning no to austerity, about 62%, that was accompanied and, you know, mainly accomplished by a mass mobilization of huge numbers of people, you know, possibly the largest demonstration seen since the beginning of the crisis. And there have been, you know, quite a few massive mobilizations in Greece. So there's still that energy, that like mass, of the mass activity around the referendum. And that's, you know, what popular unity is really trying to represent and, you know, give direction to, and sort of where they see their sense of legitimacy, right? So, you know, Syriza got this mandate to end austerity. There is this overwhelming no vote, and they turn the no into a yes. And what popular unity is presenting themselves as is the representatives of the 62% of Greeks who voted no. So, you know, we haven't seen very large demonstrations since the referendum, although there certainly have been demonstrations. But as these new austerity measures come into effect and people start feeling the pressure from it, on top of all the other tremendous stress that they're under from the previous memorandum's austerity, there could be sort of a revival of this no movement, as it's sometimes referred to. And that would be, you know, I think a highly significant development. Mm.
And can you speak to Golden Dawn, the fascist party? Are they growing? Are they gaining popularity?
Yeah, you know, it's really astonishing. I mean, growing, you know, again, just looking at this new poll that just came out, it seems like they may grow a little bit. But what's really astonishing, I think, is that they've managed to maintain the level of support that they had, you know, in the last couple of elections, which is, you know, around 7% or so, which is really horrifying given that they're a fairly open neo-Nazi party. They've been able to maintain that level of support even though their entire leadership, or almost their entire leadership, is imprisoned or under house arrest. There was a major government crackdown on the group after Pavlos Fysis, who's this anti-fascist rapper, was murdered by a Golden Dawn member. And, you know, they're basically the whole leadership was arrested, including most of their members of parliament, were arrested and are now on trial for being part of a criminal organization, among other things. So that the fact that that has not deterred support for Golden Dawn is very troubling, and sort of speaks to the fact that when the revolutionary left fails, right, when they, in the sense that they fail to present a viable alternative to the failed strategies of reformism, which is, you know, represented by the Syriza leadership and Prime Minister Tsipras, the far right wing is the primary beneficiary, right? Because, you know, workers are desperate and are vulnerable to these extreme backwards ideas. And if there's no revolutionary option on the table, then there's all this space for the extreme right wing to grow.
Thanks so much, Walter.
All right, thank you.